Hey folks, welcome to our first ever Throwback Thursday. That is right. From every Thursday onwards, we will be going into our vault and extracting an episode that we really like, that we wanted to share with you. Now, this week, I have chosen to go with our very first episode because I understand that a lot of our listeners now probably haven't went back that far. There's over 300 episodes in our feed, so I totally get it if you haven't went back to the start. But I want to go back to a much simpler time. I want to go back to December the 15th, 2017, in order to kind of show you what this was all about way back at the start. Back then, we had a third host, David, who we missed dearly, and shows were a lot shorter, like a lot shorter. The due diligence that we usually do, no, we just wasn't there. We just didn't do it. This was the embryonic stage of the podcast, if you will. We didn't know what it was going to become. We didn't know it was going to go on this long. So here's a little blast from the past for you. Hope you really enjoy it. And yeah, just let us know what you think. This is Unsung Episode 1, and this is about The Remote Part by Idlewild.
You're listening to the Unsung Podcast, where we talk about classic albums and decide if they deserve that distinction. And we also talk about some unsung classics in the hopes of bringing them to a new audience. And at the end of it all, we let you decide if we were right or wrong. This is the Unsung Podcast. Talk about a classic album today, which I believe was two. Who chose this album?
I don't know. I think it kind of came naturally because we were trying to work out albums that were slightly current, maybe had something going on with them. And this one seemed to just sort of stand out in terms of shows had been recently announced. It's an anniversary, etc.
Would you want to tell us what it is then?
It's The Remote Part by Idlewild.
I'm your host, Mark Fraser, also known as The Creator, I guess. And I'm joined by two fabulous gentlemen who are also my co-hosts.
Hello. To my left is Chris Cusack. I first knew of him playing in Hey Enemy.
Dead or American.
No, I didn't know you in Dead or American. I then discovered that you'd played in Dead or American, who I'd liked, but I was too young to ever go and see you. And then he's always been in bands. And then he's been the booker and promoter in Block, a lovely independent music venue in Glasgow, for a good few years now. Mm-hmm. And he's rocking a slight moustache right now as well.
Yes. Yeah.
Is that actually true? That's you're making me blush. I didn't think I could grow one of those. I've been trying for so long.
Oh, wow. The hard work has paid off.
Well, to my right is the really very generous David Weaver.
I have a moustache. It's not, I'm not lying.
I don't think it qualifies. But, David, I've known you for 10 years, maybe slightly more. David is a Ross County fan.
That is true.
Wow.
And if you haven't heard of Ross County, they are apparently a football team.
Apparently. I think we'll find that we've beaten you on several occasions.
I think we'll have to refer to the dictionary for the word several. But anyway, David's a Ross County fan. He dabbles in music. He was one of the founders of Detour, which is a fairly notorious and kind of like respected, if not slightly feared, promotions organisation that used to put things on in like little guerrilla locations around Glasgow and do broadcasts. And he's many other things besides, but since he missed so many things out about me, I'm just going to leave it at that.
That's fine by me. The Remote Part by Idlewild. Quite a well-loved album from a well-loved band in Scotland, certainly.
Yeah, it brought out mixed emotions, I would say.
At the time or now or both?
When it was mentioned. in the blind panic that was, are we going to do this? Well, we need to start somewhere. Yeah. Do The Remote Part. That's like got an anniversary coming up or something like that, and it's vaguely relevant. I was like, all right, cool. But it did. I mean, I have to, like, my stomach flipped and then flipped back again.
So who's going to make the case for why this album should be there in the canon of classic records?
I don't know if that... I'm not willing to put my money on the table.
Well, I'll put it out there that I got it for my 16th birthday. My best friend bought it for me. CD in hand out of HMV in Inverness. And the album before, 100 Broken Windows, had probably been my most played album, most played physical CD over the previous 2 years. I just absolutely adored that album. It was the one that sat in my CD player and woke me up every morning as my alarm. I don't know, there was just something about it. It was so raw, but still so melodic. It just mixed sort of punky noise with a sort of indie sensibility.
So you're now talking about 100 Broken Windows.
Yeah, I know, but I have a feeling that an issue with Remote Part is that it's not 100 Broken Windows.
Well, I think we should just... That's the elephant in the room here. I would imagine that a lot of people, of the hordes of people that are listening to this, many are probably immediately slamming their hands on the table because we've spoken about Remote Part and not 100 Broken Windows, which, you know, for my money is clearly the better album. But I guess we have to kind of work backwards to get to that realization and give it a fair crack.
Should we give this album a fair crack though? I mean, 100 Broken Windows is the superior record. Is this a more important record for Idlewild or for Scottish music though?
I think Idlewild regard it as a more important record for themselves. I mean, you can see the fact that they're doing, you know, they're doing two ABC shows in December for it, and you know, playing it in full, and they're doing London as well. They didn't, you know, give a shit about 100 Broken Windows when it passed, even though it's sort of more critically lauded. I think you could see when this album came out, the budgets were bigger, you know, in terms of music videos, recording, everything. And they just expected it to take them to a sort of higher level, certainly in America. I think that was a big aim for them, try and crack a market, as it were. I just remember when it came out, REM were being mentioned all the time.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And I think they supported REM maybe in the run-up to this album, maybe just after it. But you know those first two singles, American English and You Held the World in Your Arms, you could tell that they'd sat down and maybe sort of committed it to be, let's make this as anthemic as possible, let's make this a big American radio-friendly unit shifter, basically. Yeah. Whereas, you know, before on 100 Broken Windows, it was just, you know, sound of a band enjoying themselves, I think.
Well, I think Roddy said with it for this album, as I understand it from interviews, he said this was the album where it felt like the band was writing best as a unit. And this is before Bob Fairful left for... Man, there's varying accounts of why Bob left. Some say he was trying to throttle Roddy. Others would put it down to the fact that I think Bob was having some issues with his... personal habits at the time, but there's probably a little bit of truth in both. But Roddy, from the stuff I read about this, you know, looking into it a bit, it seems like he really felt they came together very well in this. And I will say, I do think some of the songwriting in this album is amazing. I think it's probably got their best song, arguably, in Modern Way of Letting Go as well.
Modern Way of Letting Go is the one that my band covered when I was 16.
I remember that
16.
Story, actually.
And when this album came out, it was... Me, you know, my girlfriend and I at the time, it was our album. We listened to it all the time.
It was yours.
It was, yeah. We owned it.
I never even asked.
Together. It's just on lease now. But no, it was like, it was a big album for me. I listened to it. It wasn't a letdown for me at the time. I didn't go, oh, this is nothing compared to 100 Broken Windows. I got immediately into it, listened to it a lot. Still got some great songs. I really like Tell Me 10 Words. I don't know, there's something about that track I've always loved. There's just like a refrain, like the second part of the chorus, if you want to go, yeah, that deep. Then it's just like that always gets me. And then like the last track, I pretty much just ripped off for our old band's best song because it was a third of that song, I don't know. Something, yeah, it was kind of that big anthemic thing. I just, yeah,
I kind of feel with this album like built a rod for their own backs, if you pardon the use of the word rod, given that the word rod is so like ubiquitous in any reference to Ida Wild. But he did make a Rod for their own backs with the quality of 100 Broken Windows. I mean, it was so good. But I think one of the surprises of this album was that it did stand up following that, but it maybe stood up for the wrong reasons, and that like it kind of gave people a lot of what they wanted coming off the back of 100 Broken Windows, whereas 100 Broken Windows was a fair departure from Hope's Important. Yeah. And it was also quite unexpected, and there was a real kind of boldness to it in that sense. This was like, okay, what do people want from our next album? Let's give them that. And even maybe illustrating that kind of renewed motivation to be like, oh, maybe we can actually start to make real dents and charts and stuff with these songs. The production I find in this album is a really big problem. Like I find it very sticky and kind of overdone and overcooked, and it works really well in places, but you know, I think A Modern Way of Letting Go Again is the best example of the production really working, because it's a power rock song. It's just power pop, power rock, and it's really nice and thick and dense and just cuts. It's great to DJ and stuff like that, but some of the other tracks in the album are just really overcooked, and I think that's kind of telling of where their minds were at. They were kind of looking at radio and kind of looking at commercial success and tie-ins and stuff. I mean, maybe they didn't necessarily expect that would happen, but it just doesn't seem like, you know, you don't record an album in that fashion if you want it to stay underground, or if you're indifferent to its ability to be played on FM radio. You know, that whole Uber compression thing is really, you know, you've got one eye on the radio when you're doing that.
Maybe it's just me in terms of production, but I mean, David Inga did.
Oh, he did some classics.
He did some classics, but
Lodestar.
He's got a sound though, and maybe it's just because I'm a big Mannix fan, but I hear a lot of Mannix-esque sounds on this record, but in a really annoying way.
Yeah, maybe that's what I don't like.
Which I think comes from his production, particularly the swathes of strings in some of the songs, the weird keyboard parts and all that, which is just pure Mannix. I mean, what is it like? I'm trying to think of the song.
Century After Century has got a weird production.
I Never Wanted as well, it sounds like a Mannix B-side.
Yeah, that's that's got a really...
Yeah, it's got the really sort of toned down vocals. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the weird guitar sounds at the start and all that.
That's was one of the first things that Alan Stewart wrote with him as well.
Was it?
Yeah, yeah. Like Alan, that, I think that's one of his first credit with the band, from the point where he joined, yeah.
Mm.
I think it's this one.
I was going to say, like, this is one of those albums that on my iPod I've basically whittled it down to just five tunes over the years. It's like I just like eschewed all the rest of the stuff. And so the tunes I was left with were Modern Way, Never Wanted, I'm What I'm Not, Out of Routine, which I think is an excellent song, by the way. I think Out of Routine, again, super saturated production, really Weezer-esque slabs of guitar kind of production. And Century After Century, which I thought was kind of quite nice. I think it's Century that's got a really nice little piano break in the middle, and it just happens once, and it's this little kind of piano section that was just quite different. But yeah, I mean,
I'm What I Am Not, I think that's the one that stood out to me re-listening to it.
Most like their earlier album.
Sounded most like earlier stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It's
got the energy to it.
It could have been on like Hope.
Because like Modern Way, although it's, you know, fast and punky and rocky, it's like a bigger, more obvious riff.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't necessarily sound like earlier Ida Wild. What I Am Not is kind of got that slight intricacy.
You kind of get the feeling that could either have been kicking about for ages and they just never worked it down. Or that was just coming from the same place as the Hope It's Not Important sort of stuff. It's quite naive, but it's quite nice because of that, I think. I mean, if I never hear You Held the World and American English again, I'm totally fine with that. I mean, I think maybe the first time I heard Held the World, because you just loved the previous album and you're like, what's the next thing they do? And then that comes out and you're like, oh, cool, this is
good. That's the thing, they were built to be big, obvious songs. But, and they are big, obvious songs, but they don't have a lot of depth to them.
Yeah, it definitely sags after a while.
Yeah,
American English, I just never liked. I really never liked that song, at all. It was just so deliberate.
And I think fucking catchy though.
Is it?
Sticks in your head for days, man.
Oh, man, no.
Not even necessarily in a good way either.
I tell you, that when he does that word contract, it just, it's like, yeah. Oh, nails on a blackboard. That little high note. Oh,
I find a lot of elite guitars on this record particularly irritating.
You do?
On the right, everything that's on the right channel is just too loud and just annoying as fuck for me.
What if you've got your headphones on the wrong way? Is that still true?
Oh, I've never tried it because I like them to be on the right way.
I'm pretty sure I've got my headphones on the wrong way right now. And I might be like, man, the stuff on the right's great. What's he talking about? It's the left, it's terrible. Actually, I've recorded with Rod Jones and I really, really particularly like Rod. I think he's really good and I really like his guitar stuff in general. You know, the kind of minimalist, that kind of melding of like art school and punk rock thing. I really do like that. And I think I noticed in some of the interviews that Roddy had done about this, he felt that this was the album that Rod really started to kind of be more confident in his playing. I mean, some of it's still quite simple, but it's pretty effective. I know I don't sound like I'm really, like, I am I'm not even on the fence of this album. I do think this is a good album. I think it's an overstated album, put it that way. Like, I think it's really good, in fact, in places, like I said, but also really contrived in other places. And I think it bode ominously for what followed for me regarding the band. I think they, whilst still having notable highlights, continued down a path of like this overcompressed commercial pursuit rather than this, maybe that's inevitable, but rather than this kind of like energised young outfit that were playing like 120 shows a year or whatever it was they were playing in Edinburgh when they, you know, pre-Captain kind of era. I mean, they were a really hard working band when they were, I remember being at university and you just seeing the stuff everywhere. So, I mean, they definitely put the work in, you know, but it just seemed like the priority shifted. I mean, when you're touring supporting Pearl Jam, they did that American tour supporting Pearl Jam, I suppose. Yeah. You can't but help have the priority shift.
Yeah, that's when you get there, isn't it? I guess that's kind of why you make records like this, to get those kind of...
Imagine them frozen, like, all in midair, doing, like, a jumping high five. Guys, we made it! I remember speaking to Alan about that, actually. He was talking about the final night of the tour, going on stage with Pearl Jam. I think it was, like, something like Rockin' in the Free World or something they played. And it was just, like, Alan was, like, the guys from Idlewild are on stage with Pearl Jam in, like, you know, like, Boston or somewhere preposterously huge. And, like, he was just, like, they're playing to, like, tens of thousands of people on stage with Pearl Jam and this, like, encore. And so it was just one of the strangest experiences. Like, and, well, I mean, understandably so, yeah.
That would be strange.
It would be strange, yep. It would be strange.
Quite strange. by the way, just a couple of tangents. So you were talking about Dave Aringa, the guy that produced this, obviously. So he'd done the Manics, right? I'm not a Manics fan. I am, however, a huge fan. I think it's a 1995 album, Flood, by Headswim. It's this, like, English...
Headswim. Is that the one with Tourniquet on it?
Right, no, wait a minute. Just... Hold on.
You can see the look in my eyes.
They did do Tourniquet.
Yeah.
But Headswim's first album was this album called Flood, which I heard on the Bruce Dickinson show. We were talking about this last week. And it was really heavy, like really heavy. It was just some sort of like really dark, nasty version of grunge, but like faster and really much meaner. And Aringa produced it, and it's a really good album. It's, you know, a little bit cheesy in places, but it's super, super exciting for like a teenager to find their own band that's not super mainstream, but ticks all the boxes that like Nirvana and Smashing Pumpkins were ticking for me at that point, and was even heavier.
Basically a hipster Bush.
I'm just sort of taking the wind at myself. No, they were not a hipster Bush because I was into Bush at the time, so I didn't need a hipster Bush. I was into 16 Stone. 16 Stone was hipster Bush, okay? But anyway, they were much heavier than that, like much heavier than that at the time. Like anyway, the point being, that's a really great album. This is not about Headswim, but Headswim later decided, I think they went on to do a kind of Radiohead-esque, Radiohead light in their second album, which is the Tourniquet thing and the stuff you're talking about where, you know, like JG72 and all that were coming out and they went for this.
Three Colours Red.
Oh, and like even Three Colours Red were a bit more power pop than JG 72 and that kind of jangly.
They had more in common with the Wild Hearts and anything else, I think.
Yeah. But but Dave Oringa and a band called Lodestar as well, who were sort of like a little bit like Sona Farik, but like a bit more clunky.
Yeah, that's an album we could do. That is Sona Farik.
So is Lodestar by Lodestar, man. What a record. Or I remember listening to all this stuff at the same time. Remember that guy Rico from Glasgow?
Yeah.
Rico.
Did he not tour with Nine Inch Nails, maybe?
Something like that, yeah. I mean, he was definitely in that kind of bracket. He's probably working in a chip shop somewhere. Probably. You could probably give him a shout.
I don't think there's anything wrong with Dave Oringa's production. I just think there's something strange about it. It feels so facile on this record.
I feel
it doesn't
that
lend
it's,
to anything.
It's quite inconsistent.
Yeah, like, totally, yeah.
You know, you've got your big acoustic song, Live in a Hiding Place, and then the song after that is just so saturated with, you know, compression and distortion and really fizzy and I don't know, it's like every song is the most it could be of that sound. And it makes the album, it doesn't have a particularly nice, I don't know, sonic flow.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I don't think the guitar parts that are on the right channel, which are really loud, are bad. they just feel like they're out there on they're definitely out there on their own, and it just kind of, I think it's a frequency thing.
Yeah.
It's just so much treble. The whole thing's got so much fucking treble on it, man.
Yeah.
It makes me go, ah.
You see, David Ringer did a lot of the Idlewild stuff after that, though. I think he did at least the next two albums.
Funnily enough, because he did one song on 100 Broken Windows, didn't he?
Did he?
Yeah. Idea track, maybe?
There was one song in 100 Broken Windows was done by someone else, but I thought it was like somebody like Scott Litt or somebody like that.
Oh, maybe.
Bob Weston did it. Bob Weston did the standalone track in 100 Broken Windows.
Oh, yeah.
Stephen Street's on this record as well. Stephen Street produces one track, 9, I believe. Yeah, Tell Me 10 Words, which is really remarkable. Didn't turn out like a Blur song, because that's all he ever did.
Do you know what else Dave Oringa produced? He produced Confide in Me by Kylie Minogue.
Absolute belter. Truly, I fucking love that song.
Remember her indie period?
Yeah.
I had this conversation recently with, it was Ben from Blank Mass. He didn't know that Kylie had an indie period. I was like, Jesus, man.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, she was supposed to be on Little Baby Nothing by the Manics, but it never transpired, so they end up getting some like ex-porn star to do the vocal on it, and it's like that's what it is to this day. But she was supposed
they are so edgy.
She was supposed to do it, but she did actually do it. I think she later did a collaboration with the Manics.
I think you're right,
it was a B-side.
I remember being nonplussed. Yeah. You know what else Dave Oringa produced? Dave Oringa produced the most recent Proclaimers record. Is that a lot different from the most recent Idlewild record? You could ask that question. but no, he did the Proclaimers recently, so, you know. I mean, to that end as well, I think there's the inclusion, is it Scottish Fiction, Edwin Morgan?
Edwin Morgan is my favourite poet ever, hence that tattoo.
Oh, right, okay. That hurt.
I fucking love Edwin Morgan, man.
Well, the inclusion of him, though, at the end, for me, marked that point where Roddy, who was obviously the focal point of the band in a lot of ways, but where Roddy went from being that kind of like yelpy, adrenalized kind of like punk rock Damon Albarn-y thing to seeing himself as more of this like sensitive kind of woolen jumper wearing
folky poet.
Yeah. And I think like, and this is just not a slight in Roddy, but I found that persona a little bit off-putting as it went on. I liked his lyrics prior to that, you know, and I think even dropping the big clunky kind of Gertrude Stein references and stuff, it was nice because it was so unusual. I felt it got a little bit self-referential and a little bit self-aware. Maybe from that point on, it became like a little bit too like, you know.
Yeah, lyrically, I think Remote Part, yeah, self-aware is the, I always go back to, funnily enough, this album came out at the same time I was doing Higher English and I was studying Othello.
Mm-hmm.
And a classic line in Othello, Iago goes, "I am not what I am."
Mm.
And then at the same time I was listening to Idlewild and "I am what I am not." And I was like, well, that's really clever. And then looking back at it now, I was like, yeah, that's really clever for high school English. So to me, I don't know, the whole album lyrically feels a bit,
I think it's dated a little bit badly.
I would go one further. I say there's a lot of nonsense on this album.
I don't know, I feel like
I am what I am not, come on, as a lyric, I can't feel that, man. I'm not vibing with that at all.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a little bit, like, kind of cloy in it. But, I mean, at the same time, I mean,
you contract.
Come on, if we're going to start, like, dissecting lyrics and albums, there's not going to be many survivors. I mean, there's some
I totally agree with that. But on the other hand, it comes back to what you're saying about Ed Morgan, though. You don't put in probably the greatest Scottish poet, like, certainly post-World War II. You don't drag him onto your record and not think that you're kind of approaching that league in some way.
No, I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that. I kind of feel like the poetry kind of, the grand designs of the kind of like sort of gentle philosopher punk rock poet thing kind of went for me from that point onwards, I felt, and when Roddy went into his solo career, and, you know, and even like the names of the solo stuff, you know, I felt that persona that he was putting out there, for me, kind of started from this point onwards. I don't think...
The inner sleeve of 100 Broken Windows says support your local poet.
Yeah.
So he'd always...
It seemed more tongue-in-cheek, though. It seemed like there was a little bit of believing your own hype, though, from that point forward. It sounded like I'm slamming the guy. I don't mean to. I just mean the persona that was constructed in the band seemed more definite from after this album as a result of that. I didn't feel this album was overly guilty of that. Yeah, some of the lyrics are a little bit naive, but they were still kind of young guys, and they were, you know... Yeah. And they were playing kind of like... catchy, arty, punky music. You know, I don't want to shit on them too hard for that. I get what you're saying, but I feel like maybe that's like an unsustainable standard to put on guys in their very early 20s.
I just think maybe it's because I'm a huge Edwin Morgan fan. I just kind of think I can't pull those two things together in my head. No doubt he loved them, but they take an influence from that. He's nowhere even near it.
I mean, I'm a total Philistine. Don't know a damn thing about Edwin Morgan.
I've got a good Edwin Morgan story. I did in my fourth year of uni.
Not many podcasts will have that line in them.
I know. My fourth year of uni, I did. When Edwin Morgan died, he donated all of his manuscripts and everything to Glasgow Uni Library. Hmm? I did a project on looking at stuff, and I actually seen the handwritten version of Scottish Fiction, and it was really cool. And I later found out that pretty much everything he wrote down was like the final draft, because he redrafted it so much in his head before it got to the paper. So by the time I actually put it down on paper, it was like, that was it. So it was kind of weird to see all these amazing poems that I love just like without any edits, and kind of go, how could he do that? I can't, nobody else does that.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
And he had lots of stuff, man. Like, I seen maps, he'd drawn maps on the backs of pamphlets for how to get to the bus stop to a certain part in town and all that. It was an odd, really odd man. That guy was amazing, though. I could recommend you so much by him.
Do you have any albums?
Yeah, I funnily enough, when I was doing Othello in Higher English, I was also doing Edwin Morgan.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
He was our poet that we did. So, yeah, those three things.
I just hope
Othello, Idlewild,
just,
and Edwin Morgan.
I just hope this is going to be something you drop 16. In every episode. It's just like, back when I was younger and I was doing Othello. Before anybody accuses me of being the bimbo of the bunch.
Everything comes back to Othello. We should call the podcast that. Everything comes back to Othello.
That's probably one I already called that, man. You know that You Held the World was in FIFA 2003?
Yes, I remember playing it and hearing it, and that's when I first heard Idlewild.
really?
Yeah, that was legit when I first heard.
Amazing. That is pretty interesting. You're Scottish and ostensibly have ears and are into music in some form, and it took you till 2003 playing FIFA.
I was 16 at the time. I was just getting into music, and I was mostly listening to new metal at that time.
What else stood out from FIFA 2003, might I ask?
That's the only thing I can remember. That was literally the only song on that soundtrack which made me go, what the fuck is that? That sounds Scottish. And I had to explore more. And I did love this album when it first came out. When I first heard it, I was like, this is a great record. But I just... Time hasn't been kind to a lot of it.
All you can imagine is that kids buying FIFA 2018, if it happens, might be treated to Twin Atlantic.
Moving on.
I think your mic's cut out there, I guess.
Anyway, we're not talking about Twin Atlantic, we're talking about the Wild. Is there anything else you want to add? Anybody?
I mean, I just kind of get the feeling that, you know, obviously for the reason of the anniversary, we had to put this forward. But it's pretty clear that the classic Idlewild album,
this is
100 Broken Windows.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's
no contest. And, you know, you could probably ask my mum that and she'd probably tell you. I mean, that is like, and, you know,
in no way it's a bad album.
Oh, no, not at all.
It's not a bad album, no, but they don't. There was an interesting article in The Guardian. I say they, Roddy, who seems to be, you know, interchangeable with they. But he was asked about the Idlewild albums, to put them in order. He put him, by the way, he put Hope's Important last. And he put their fifth or sixth album first, which obviously I suppose you do if you're doing a promotional tour. Like, I feel now we're writing as well.
I've yet to see a band that haven't just done their albums in reverse chronological order.
Against Me did, against Lords and Grace did that. If you put like their latest album like fourth or fifth.
Oh, really? Actually, yeah. Oh, see.
If you put, like, I think she put first, like, their first album.
Yeah.
She was like, I had no idea.
It's very rare though, because I think Converge just recently did it.
And it was in order.
I remember, I mean, Biffy Clyro did it in order.
And yeah, they've got some real classics too, don't they?
they have
they're
some,
out there flying the flag. They'll be in FIFA. Definitely.
They will definitely be in FIFA.
They'll be in FIFA as Kenny Miller is banging one in the top corner against you just to compound the pleasure.
I'm fairly certain the captain was in a FIFA game.
The captain?
The song The Captain.
What, is that a Biffy Clyro song?
The one with the boots and the clapping.
I must have missed that one. The boots and the clapping.
Aye. You can't miss it.
I thought there was clapping in every Biffy Clyro song, man.
Only from like the third album on.
To be fair, I mean, we're obviously going to have to touch on this at some point, and that's going to be a long night.
So, yeah. Is this album important musically for Scotland, do you think? I wouldn't ask us about any album, but since we're Scottish, well, I think we should address
actually,
it.
Actually, can I throw something in here as well before we get to this point, right? So you guys know about the kind of the whole Berenstain Bears phenomenon.
Yes.
But about the phenomenon of how the spelling of the word.
Uh-huh.
You know this?
No.
The alternate, also alternate universe thing.
Right, so there's this like, it's obviously a conspiracy theory, it's pure InfoWars, right? But basically there's this thing called the Berenstain Bears effect, mm-hmm. which is that the Berenstain Bears is actually spelt Berenstain Bears.
Yeah.
But everybody remembers from their childhood it being spelled a different way. And yeah, so there's this idea that, you know, obviously there's been some kind of moment where like reality's been flipped or the Matrix was switched on and they got a detail wrong and all this kind of garbage here, right? So I'm having a Berenstain Bears effect moment with Idlewild being on Saturday Night Live. So and I looked this up and I could not find it. And I could have sworn that when I was younger, I was blown away because Idlewild during that Pearl Jam tour, maybe even with American English, ended up on one of the big American talk shows, I thought, or late night shows. I thought it was Saturday Night Live. But see, and I can't find any evidence that this happened now. I've not seen anybody that might know.
Well, it's interesting because maybe I could have just made this up on the back of what you just said. But before we started recording, I said, I've had American English stuck in my head for a couple of days and I decided to try and learn how to play guitar. In order to do that, I looked on YouTube to see any live versions of it, and there's definitely them playing it on an American talk show. I can't tell you which one.
Right.
But it's not Saturday Night Live. I think it might be something like Letterman, probably not Letterman, but something like
so,
that.
So I can recall this, but then the other day I was going crazy. I don't know what's going on with the algorithms in my computer. I have no idea what the Russians are trying to accomplish, but I absolutely could not find it. And I was just tearing my hair out. Like, it really, really frustrated me. But yeah. If that happened and you have indeed set up social media, I hope somebody might actually send us a link because I would like the closure. Thank you.
Okay, so should we sum up then before the next one?
Yeah, is this important? Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of like, I could be really dismissive. There's a lot.
Please be dismissive because I think maybe we think the same thing. Yeah.
There's a lot of like whimsical, forgettable, chuchtery indie rock bands that came from it and probably, I would say, a few really good bands that came from the kind of power pop, power rock side of it. I mean, I never really mentioned, like I said, Out of Routine. I think that's an absolute beast of a tune. It's a bit overproduced, but it's a tune with like a good verse, a great pre-chorus, and then a great chorus. And I love any song that steps up three
times. It's also very feeder on that, like very
feeder. There's like that kind of like feeder Everclear sort of saturated, cheesy thing. But it's a really great song. And I think there was a few bands came out of that probably owe a bit to that. And it was a breakthrough album in terms of profile. I just feel like it didn't date as well as the one before it. You know, it made a splash. I think it got to number 3 when it charted. But it made a splash, definitely. And it brought attention to Scotland. And, you know, any Scottish band that breaks out tends to encourage a load of other Scottish bands behind it to just rip them off mercilessly. But from that, you tend to get a few good ones. So yeah, it's probably had an effect. But I don't think there's any denying that 100 Broken Windows has surely surely we're not so out of touch with the general consensus here. But I think 100 Broken Windows seems head and shoulders like the more important and just more artistically accomplished piece of work.
Viva.
Seconded.
Final has spoken. We hope you agree. Go and vote on Facebook. On the next episode, we're going to talk about
Jane Doe. Converge.
By Converge.
Great.
So tune in for that. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.